Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We are talking about holiday cooking, particularly getting that Christmas Day meal together so that it is absolutely perfect. My guests in studio, Chef Sammy Davis of the Milk and Honey Cafe and Chef Huda, a little TV chef here, looking good as always. Chef Huda, good to see you again. Thanks for coming in. I want to go back to the phone lines at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810, answering all of your cooking culinary questions for the holidays. Katrina calling from Prince George's County. Katrina, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Good evening. Hey. Thank you so much for this opportunity.
Sure.
And I, too, am doing a seafood dinner. It's funny because I did it about 3 years ago, and my daughter texted me a picture of her plate from 3 years ago. And like, Mommy, can we do this again?
Well, she held on to that picture. Is she a college student?
She is in college.
See, there you go. That's what they do. My daughter does the same thing.
Well, I guess that's what we're doing this year. So do you have any good, quick recipes? I thought about doing like some kind of stir-fried shrimp over rice as one of the dishes.
Asian again. Mm-hmm. So you didn't think Asian would be popular.
I told you. I was wrong.
You shot me now, right out there in the hallway. You said, nah, it's not going to work today.
They're going to be doing pig feet and hog maws and black eyed peas.
We got duck and Asian stuff for already.
Yeah, we did. Exactly. So
the only thing we're repeating is macaroni and cheese and yams because my mom makes the bomb. Macaroni and cheese and yams.
That's probably your mother's middle name, Mom the Bomb.
Yeah.
Macaroni. There you go. So, what should she use for a great stir fry? And how do you keep stir fry, fresh? During a Christmas Day dinner kind of thing, because food has a tendency to sit for a while, and stir fry is fast.
Two things. First thing, she needs to wok.
Okay.
Second thing, she needs to blanch the veggies before stir frying them.
Explain that, please.
So blanch, Mrs. Katrina.
Yep, that's Katrina.
Okay, Miss Katrina, blanch. You want to get the water going to a full boil, right?
Mm-hmm.
You want to take all the veggies that you plan on stir frying, drop them in the water for no more than a minute. Take them out and put them in an ice bath. This will retain their color and retain all the freshness.
Mm-hmm.
That's key. You can do whatever you want after that. And then on execution, get the wok. The wok has to be at the highest heat possible. And the second key ingredient you're going to need besides the wok is sesame oil.
Okay.
Once the wok is at high heat, do not put the sesame oil in the bottom of the pan. Put it around the top of the edges, and the sesame oil has to run down the wok to get to the bottom so that it opens up full body flavor.
Wow.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
This is very key. You understand that?
Didn't I say easy?
This is easy. This is going to be a great stir fry, though.
Okay.
After that, you throw your little garlic in there, throw you some scallions in there, and then hit those veggies. And those veggies only need to stir fry about a minute. Stir frying is very quick.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Very, very quick. It's not, you go to some people's house, they stir fry, that stuff in a pan for 5 minutes.
They also overcook the shrimp.
Yes.
Yes.
How long do you cook the shrimp?
The shrimp go in first. Mm-hmm. I would do my shrimp in there first. Pull the shrimp out.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. 70% of the way. The other 30%, the shrimp will be finished inside of the dish at the very end. When you get into the sauce part of it, mm-hmm. that's when you want to add the shrimp back in.
Okay, real quick, Chef Huda, what's your stir fry recipe? Can you top that one?
I mean, my mouth's watering over here.
Sure, what about that crab leg recipe?
What do you call it? Can you tell us the name of it?
Well, I'll give you one of them. So what I like to do with my crab legs, I know you can get them, if you're in a pinch, you can get them done at the store. Most grocery stores will do that for you. But I like to take mine home.
Mm-hmm.
And I like to peel fresh garlic and get my aromatics in the pan, some onions, and put them at the bottom of the pan and then put my crab legs on top. And then I line the pan with a little fresh lemon. And then depending on what I'm doing, it's either garlic powder, maybe jerk seasoning, or just traditional Old Bay because I'm from Maryland. And then I let those steam in the oven. And then right before they're done, I put them under the broiler. And it gives it this amazing flavor, and they're perfectly cooked. So that's one of the things I do, and then I make a sauce that goes with it. But I can't give you that secret.
Is it any butter involved in that?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, yeah, that's all I wanted.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Well, Katrina, thank you so much, and good luck with your weekend meal. Thank you again. We appreciate you. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. JC, calling from Maryland. What's on your mind, JC?
Hi. I'm so used to the traditional turkey, ham, and, you know, that holiday meal. But this time I want steak. And I'd like to know, can you give me a marinade that I can marinate my steak? I'm having porterhouse.
She may not have heard you, so go right
ahead. She definitely missed 10 minutes ago.
Right.
Mm-hmm. What's J.C.?
Yes, J.C. from Maryland.
J.C., you absolutely do not marinate red meat. At all.
Okay.
It does nothing for it. Red meat needs high heat and to be fully coated.
Okay.
You want to form a scab on meat.
Like a crust almost.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go. There's a difference between burning it and forming a crust on it. You want to form a crust on it. So if you can get that.
Would I use butter or oil?
No,
or?
Butter, you're going to burn it. Okay. You want to use a high oil. And you can almost go without oil almost. You can almost go straight in the pan with this. Mm-hmm. You can go straight in the pan. A little light coating is about all you need.
So when you do a dry rub, what's the technique for the dry rub? Let us say that JC is going all out with the filet mignon, okay? Mm-hmm. And she wants to put a nice dry rub on it. What should she put on it to really have it pop? But also, how do you dry rub a steak?
You dry rub, so you're going to put it on the plate. Well, I would get, Paul Perdomo has a good seasoning in his stores. He has about 5 selections of them down there. Go get that steak rub, right, because this is really easy. And put it in a pan. Empty it out the thing, and just put it in a pan and coat a pan and roll the steak in it.
Okay.
Not top and not bottom. No.
The entire steak.
The entire steak. The same way you roll in the steak in the pan, roll the steak in the hot pan. When you're cooking it, get all sides. You want to form a crust on red meat. When you finish with that steak, you should see no drippings of the steak. If you go to somebody's house, right,
uh-huh.
And if you see a whole bunch of juice in the pan, stay away from that meat.
Okay.
Because ain't none of the juice in the goddarn meat.
Okay.
You see what I'm saying? if the juice is in the pan,
then it's not.
Then
in
it ain't in the darn meat.
Uh-huh.
The juice got to be in the meat. Mm-hmm. The only way to keep the blood in it is when it forms a scab, like when you cut yourself.
So when the crust is, it seals it.
It's sealing it in.
Now let me ask you, because I want to make sure I'm clear. You said put the rub in the pan, or
no,
are you
no,
suggesting
no.
put it on a cutting board?
On a cutting board. You can
okay,
put it on a cutting board.
Sure.
So but I was saying it in something board. Like a bowl
dish.
Or something, a shallow dish.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Shallow dish so that you can roll and you can use it for later.
Okay.
You'll use the seasons later. You're not going to use them all. But you want to be able to roll it freely and not do that little stuff that you see on TV with a pen. That's not going to do anything.
Okay.
You need to fully immerse this thing in seasonings.
Okay. What's that, JC?
I watch those cooking shows all the time.
Don't watch them. They no good.
Except for the ones that Chef Huda's
right.
on right now.
Watch mine, please.
Okay, <I will.
laughs> okay, and one final thing before we let JC go, because we've got a lot of folks on. I mentioned filet mignon, and you know, and a really nice one. It may be 1.5 inches, maybe 2 inches thick. Let's say we want it, not bloody, but you want it, let's say medium. Let's say if
that's
you want
the way I prefer, yes.
Okay, so how hot and how long do you cook a 1.5 inch to 2 inch filet mignon that is coated with the dry rub?
Coated with the dry rub, you're gonna roll it in a very hot pan, get a nice crust on it, and then you want to finish medium and above. You want to go in the oven with.
Oh.
Yeah, at a very high heat. So you're looking at 400 degrees in the oven right quick. And then about at that thickness, you should be done in about 8 minutes.
So pan first, then oven?
Yeah. Okay. Steps. Yeah. When it comes to red meats, there's steps involved, mm-hmm. especially when you're going over medium. You got to follow steps. Even if you're getting a big roast that my grandmother used to do, she would take that big roast and you know, at Milk and Honey, we have an iron skillet almost as big as this right here
mm-hmm.
that we do everything in. And you want to take that roast and you will roll it in there and form that crust on it. You see what I'm saying? And remember them big black pans that you're
mm-hmm.
with the
cast iron.
And the roasting, the big roasting black and white.
Say again now, JC?
Yes.
I didn't hear what you were saying just now.
I said I have the big iron frying pan. It's been in my family for at least 100 years.
Oh, I need that. I'll buy it off you right now. Oh, that's a good one.
It's a good start.
Well, JC, thank you so much, and good luck. Thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Ivy, calling from D.C., what's on your mind? Ivy, are you there? Give us a call back if you can. Let us go to Carl, calling from Annapolis. What's on your mind, Carl?
Hey, I'm calling in. Now, you just were talking about steak.
Mm-hmm.
I want to know, I have a two-part question. What's the difference between seasoning steak and seasoning pork? And what exactly are your seasonings on steak and pork?
Gene, you want me to go?
As far as red meat, beef, and pork.
He was asking the difference between seasoning pork and seasoning steak,
the difference
or red meat and the other white meat pork.
I follow the same technique on seasoning all meats. Mm-hmm. All meats are seasoned very heavily, for the most part. I season it all the same way.
Give me your seasonings, like not your special recipe, but. Exactly. Like, how would you season it? Like, salt, pepper, what?
No, I would go with the McCormick. Those are McCormick brands. Those Maple House stuff. Like, all that stuff. There's no secret to my stuff. I'm Asian trained, so I'm more technique driven. Mm-hmm. I believe the technique is more. We have no salt in our restaurant at all. We just was on Fox 5, and so we totally they was amazed that we use no salt at all. But I can take any bar of ingredients and put a technique with it. And come out with an amazing product. It's your technique, Carl. It's all in the technique. It's knowing how to cook a piece of meat versus how to season a piece of meat.
Chef, who do you
want? But my question is, I can buy McCormick's, and that's not me actually cooking it. To me, I want to know, how can I cook it from scratch the way I can be, like I can say I was a down south cook where my grandmother cooked this with her own ingredients instead of buying a pot of mixed seasonings and putting it on a piece of meat.
Oh, you want me?
So. For me, I know when I cook steaks, I know you don't use salt, but salt, pepper, I'm a purist. So salt, pepper is usually my go-to. And then depending on what I'm doing and what piece of meat we're cooking, garlic is necessary in my household. And then you get into the fresh herbs. You can do your dry herbs where you're doing your rosemary, especially if you're doing beef. Rosemary's great. Thyme's great. You can play around with it. See what flavors you like and just work with them. Also, when you're cooking steak, I like to finish like they do in the restaurants with a little melted butter over it while it rests. And it sits there and lets all the juices kind of get back to the meat. So that way you don't end up with a dry steak.
Now, I have a question for you, Chef Huda, because you did mention fresh herbs and rosemary. But you can't dry rub rosemary on a steak, can you?
You can actually use the dry rosemary.
Okay.
That point.
Okay.
Real quick. If you wanted to, mm-hmm. at some of the great steakhouses, they take the ingredients, the rosemary, the garlic. They'll put it in the oven mm-hmm. and slow roast it down, and then put it in a grinder and grind it up. And you've made your own seasonings. But I want to say this because this is most important when it comes to these meats. If you go to the finest steakhouses in the world down there at Bone Steakhouse in Tampa, Florida, say you went down there, right? That steak ain't gonna come out there with no seasoning on it.
It's all about the meat.
There you go.
It's all about the flavor.
The flavor of the meat is in the beef. If you go buy a piece of beef for $9.85 a pound, it tastes different than a piece of meat that you buy for $29 a pound.
There you go.
If you go buy the $29 a pound meat, you ain't got to worry about seasoning at all.
Because
the flavor is in the bloodline.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Wow. There you go.
That's why Kobe beef is $80 per pound. But you ain't got to do a darn thing to Kobe beef
mm-hmm.
except eat it. It'll melt in your tongue. You see what I'm saying? But you're paying $8 a pound. Now, if you go on to Target or you go on to one of these supermarkets and you're paying $6, $7 per pound for meat, Yeah, you got to do a lot to
it's going
to
taste like it.
Exactly.
Going to take a break. Carl, thank you so much. Good luck. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We're going to get you right in the kitchen for your holiday meal. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We're talking about holiday meals with style, getting it right so that your family will come back again and again. Of course, I have Chef Sammy Davis of the Milk and Honey Cafe in Beltsville and Chef Huda. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. I have a question. This is another beef question. How do you make sure that stewed beef is tender, particularly when, and maybe I'm wrong about the technique, and you can help me with this, Chef Sammy Davis, but a lot of people make stews and they cook the beef forever. How do you make sure that it stays tender?
Two things. Either in the cooking process where you're going to take the stewed beef and go overnight with it at like 220 degrees, as low as your oven can go, and just let it go overnight.
What do you mean overnight?
Just put it in the oven and roast it overnight.
For how long?
Till you wake up.
Really?
Yeah, I usually roast beef and I get up about 6 or 7 o'clock in the morning and I know it's perfect.
So you're suggesting that I just put the stew. Now how do I, let us assume that I've got some other seasonings and I don't want to do too much to it.
Yeah, exactly. That's perfect because you don't want to do anything to this beef that you're going to repurpose later.
Okay.
So this beef you can just go all night, few hours. I will put it in right before I go to bed, mm-hmm. lowest temperature possible. And then when you wake up, that 5 a.m., 6 a.m., if you're up and about and you're using, go down there, go ahead, pull it out.
Now, how do you?
Oh, ovens have timers on them now, right?
Yes. Yeah.
And put a timer on it.
And put it in, what?
A roasting pan. Roasting pan, foil. Mm-hmm. I will plastic wrap it and then foil it.
But don't put it on a roasting rack.
No.
Okay.
You can just drop that right in there.
In a roasting pan, foil. 220 at the lowest, what, 225?
How low do ovens go now?
Yeah, about 225. 225.
And such a little timer thing, so that it shuts down.
What, 5 hours?
I would say 5 hours.
Okay.
5 hours would be perfect. That's one way to do it, because you can cube that meat when it comes out, or you can cube it before you go in. Another way is on how you're cutting it, and this is at the executive chef level, because you can cut that meat on a certain way to cut around the tissue. What kind of makes meat tough is the cut. The sinew and the stuff running through the meat. Two things are going to make meat tough. The first one is very common. We know the parts that the cow uses the most is the toughest part of the meat.
Okay, so leg quarters and stuff like that.
So you know all that stuff. Stuff that runs around here is very tender.
Here, you're talking about the side of the animal.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah. Uh-huh. It's the side of the animal. Stuff around the side of the animal is very tender because they don't use those parts.
Okay.
You see what I'm saying? The same way we were talking about the chicken and the duck. Mm-hmm. A duck is so tough because the duck flies out there. A chicken don't do nothing.
Okay.
Okay. But if you get those cuts of meat that's around there, and so that part that you're talking about, that you're talking about stewing, is coming from, like, when you get that cow's shoulder and all that mm-hmm. stuff, where that cow's been working and stuff like that. And if it's a mature cow, it's going to be even tougher. That's why we recommend knowing your butcher.
Okay.
Because your butcher knows the age. It knows. I want to know what the cow was fed.
Right. Okay.
You see what I'm saying? I want to understand the cow. You know, that Wagyu beef and that Kobe beef, they got they're on alcohol, sake diets. Mm-hmm. And they have women out there massaging them in the fields.
Living the dream. Living
the dream. Yeah. A cow gets better treatment than I do around here.
Huda says, I want to be a Kobe beef cow. Yeah. Sake and massage. Yeah. But not the final resting place.
Just halfway through the process.
Halfway through the process. There you go.
So you can build a relationship with a good butcher that you know and understand the freshness, you know, that cow and the younger cows, and know which restaurants or which supermarkets, you know, such as Whole Foods and those, you know, upper markets to get those young cows, and the beef is going to be a little bit tender. But if you didn't get time for all of that, just put it in a roasting pan, let it go overnight, cube it up beforehand, and you'll get you some amazing tender pieces.
Wow. I will definitely keep that in mind. I learned something.
There's a new part of cow that they found about 15 years ago that entered the market. It's called the Terrace Major. It's called the bistro filet. Now, understand this. People have been pulling the switcheroonie on y'all in restaurants. This is kitchen confidential on a restaurant level. Mm. what looks like a filet, mm-hmm. it's really a bistro filet. A filet going to run you $9 to $12 per pound. They found this bistro filet that's connected around the same area as the cow. But because it's in such an abundance and because of how they found it, they selling that thing for $3 per pound.
Hmm.
It's in every freaking restaurant. I promise you that.
Okay.
Because when restaurants, when you don't order that much of it, it's hard to get it in your restaurant. That's how much of that they move in by the cases. The bistro filet or Terrace Major.
Terrace Major. Okay. Yeah. So on the vegetable tip, Chef Huda, because you know one of the things that a lot of people, and I know you talk you know, a lot about garlic, and I shouldn't say vegetables so much as I do mean your starches. Mm-hmm. What do you recommend for sweet potatoes, mashed potatoes, and other kinds, and you know, turnips and rutabagas, for example? Because I must admit, I brought some mashed rutabagas in here that I had with, you know, some smoked turkey and some other stuff. And my coworkers, they always come into the newsroom and they're smelling what I'm eating. And they're like, what is that? And I said, it's a rutabaga. And they say, what is that? Because, you know, I'm surprised that some people just don't, they just aren't familiar. So what do you recommend for those?
So what I always tell people, food is supposed to be fun. Holidays are supposed to be about being with your family, loved ones, and food. So have fun in your grocery stores. If you're going to get into cooking or if you have kids, go in the grocery store and pick out a different vegetable. I did the same thing for my nephews. Pick out different vegetables that you're not used to, that you didn't grow up with, and learn how to cook them. Or try cooking them, roasting them, boiling them, whatever works for you. Try different things. Especially during the holiday season, I love having other people bring dishes. Because everyone assumes, because you're a chef, you know, you're supposed to cook everything.
Yeah.
And you're supposed to cook everything, and everyone just shows up, and yay! But I love having other people bring dishes, and I love theming my holidays. So one year we did all vegetarian dishes. And people came up with some really creative things. So try different things. Introduce them to your family and have fun with it. It's the holidays. Mm-hmm. And roasting for vegetables is an amazing way to cook them.
What about potatoes? There are so many. You got white potatoes, yellow potatoes, Idaho potatoes, red potatoes, one potato, two potato, three potato, four. What makes the best mashed potatoes?
So for me, I love a good red bliss potato. That's my favorite. I don't have to peel it. It's easy. It's simple. I can roast them ahead of time or I can boil them, completely up to me how I do them. But my mashed potatoes come out the same. Mm-hmm. And I love just throwing in, I love garlic, I have to say. I do.
Yeah.
So garlic, salt and pepper, a little cream or milk, whatever I have that day. And they just come out delicious every time. And I love them because I don't have to peel them.
Yeah. And I like, you know, mashed red potatoes as well. Mm-hmm. You know, once you get the eyes off and you clean them up. You know, I just like the texture.
Yes.
Of the skin and the like. And for you, Chef Sammy, I do have yet another meat question in the last minute or so. Went to a restaurant last year and I love duck. Mm-hmm. Love, you know, duck breast. That, you know, that has been scored, as you spoke about scoring, and rendered where the fat is, it's come off. And I like using, you know, the duck fat to make, mm-hmm. you know, fry some potatoes in
fried
it.
Fries. Which,
yeah,
yes.
Just really, really, you know, just really fantastic. But one of the things that I noticed, and again, this is about tenderizing, the duck that I had at this particular restaurant was melt in your mouth tender. And with, as you said, with flying fowl, how do you get duck breast tender?
Duck breast tender is scored in a saute pan at a very, very, very low heat, and you just render the heck out of it. You're going to render the fat. So you put it down on the fat side, the
right.
score side
mm-hmm.
down,
mm-hmm.
and you're going to render that, and it's going to go for about 25 minutes at least.
Really?
At least. But while it's rendering, you're pouring the fat off, pouring the fat off.
You mean taking it out or pouring it over?
No. You're just pouring it out the pan.
Okay.
Yeah, pouring it out the pan into something. You said you use it for duck fat fries, mm-hmm. so you're repurposing it. So you're taking your fat and putting it in something else. So you just keep rendering it, and it's rendering down. And in about 25, 30 minutes, and you turn it over on the finally going to turn it on the meat side and cook that for about whatever your preference is. I like my duck medium rare.
Mm-hmm. I like it. Yeah. I mean, duck traditionally is supposed to be that medium rare and not still quacking. But,
exactly.
Yeah.
So in about 4 to 5 minutes on that side, on the meat side, you pull it out and you slice that thing. It's going to melt in your mouth.
Okay.
All the way.
Wonderful. Look, I want to thank both of you all for coming in and sharing, you know, some of these great tips. I hope that, you know, for those of you who have had a chance to call in and learn a little something, I just have a feeling that next week I'm going to get some calls. I'm going to see somebody on social media. They've heard the program, and they're still going to be sitting down in front of Facebook, patting their stomachs from all. Certainly looking forward to it. Listen, as always, we are going to have the websites for our guests on WHUR.com. Chef Sammy Davis can be found at the Milk In, as in the letter N, MilkInHoneyCafe.com. And of course, Chef Huda, HUDA.com. We're going to post that and check them out. You know, definitely check them out, just like I'm going to check out these brownies. Boy, I tell you, they look deliciously sinful. Thank you both so much. I appreciate
it. Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
That is the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Wednesday, December 21st. I'm Harold Fisher. You can reach me on Facebook at Harold Fisher, WHUR, on Twitter at H Fisher, WHUR, or at Daily Drum, WHUR. Now, stay tuned for The Connection with Lorna Newton. Good night.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3 HD2, student-run WHBC HD3, GlassHouseRadio.com, SiriusXM Channel 142, HBCU and SiriusXM Channel 141, HUR Voices, Washington.
Happy holidays and a blessed new year from our family to yours. SiriusXM Channel 141, HUR Voices.